This is Mike Anderson with Michael A. Anderson Photography in Concord, North Carolina, and you're listening to the Petapixel Photography Podcast with Sharky James. Hey now!
Welcome to the Petapixel Photography Podcast, episode 37. Do you ask for forgiveness or for permission? In this episode, an update in the monkey copyright case, Samsung's cameras are a no-show at CES 2016, a well-intentioned photo project goes horribly wrong, Kodak thinks Super 8 will make a comeback, and photographer Mike Anderson has an interesting question for me. All that and more in episode 37 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Thank you so much, Mike, for opening the show. I greatly appreciate it. Mike Anderson is a Concord, North Carolina-based photographer who specializes in weddings, commercial assignments, sports, and families. But truth be told, Mike can really do it all. And it's that mastery of his craft that has grown his online following into the tens of thousands and caught the attention of Facebook, the company. I'm not just talking about people on Facebook, actual Facebook. Now, a little later in the show, we have a question that Mike sent in that I find quite interesting, so we'll be answering it here. To check out his work, head on over to michaelaanderson.com with hyphens in between all of that, or you can hit the show notes for the link. And I'd like to thank you all for joining us here in episode 37 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. We appreciate you all so much, and thank you for subscribing, rating, and reviewing us in iTunes or wherever else you listen to us. We also greatly appreciate you telling your friends as well. Thank you so much for that. Okay, with that, I'm your host, Sharky James. Let's hit it. Ever have an idea, think it's really cool, only to find out that everyone else hates it, or seemingly everyone? Not just that, but people come down on you really hard and accuse you of being a racist when you were just trying to do something good? Yeah, that's no fun. Well, that's basically what happened recently when a Hungarian journalist and human rights lawyer named Boglárka Balog published a series of photos online for a good cause. She was trying to do something good here. Well, no good deed goes unpunished, as they say, and now she's being criticized for the project, which features Photoshop portraits of her face edited onto the portraits of African tribeswomen. She's white, they're black. The project had been posted in a blog on Bored Panda, where she wrote that after spending some time in Africa, she wanted to share the beauty of the continent and its cultures. So what could possibly go wrong, right? Of the project, she said, quote, "I became fully aware of the issues regarding a number of endangered tribes and the speed at which they are fading away. These stunning portraits show how beauty varies across the globe and prove that all of us are beautiful in a different way. They're celebrating stunning tribal beauties at the brink of extinction," end quote. So the idea that she had was to raise awareness for these often endangered cultures by showing what she would look like as a member of each of those tribes. She teamed up with a Photoshopper, replaced each woman's eyes with her own, and her facial features as well. So basically, she took on their coloring and kept their torso, their hair, and their headpieces. Well, reaction to this project wasn't exactly what she had hoped for, with one calling it seven types of blackface. And I think you see where this is going. As you might imagine, the internets, that's right, the internets, took to Twitter to express their outrage, with one user saying, quote, "A white woman does blackface and is surprised when black people are offended, proceeds to tell us we're not qualified enough to be offended," end quote. Another user also didn't like this project, saying, quote, "White people, I promise you that whatever your intentions, blackface will go over really poorly," end quote. So yeah, this wasn't at all the reaction she had hoped for. Not in the slightest. But she saw the light, removed the post, and issued an apology, saying, quote, "Since I had no intentions to offend anyone, and yet I'm not able to answer all of you, I've decided to delete my post. My intention was 100% pure with this tribal art. Being a human rights lawyer and journalist who knows pretty much about racism and similar issues, I have never imagined that my work will annoy so many people and that I will have to explain myself," end quote. You know, this is one of those things, I guess, where unless you're of African descent, you can't really fully appreciate it. I think we're all intelligent enough, of course, to understand these things, but unless you're of that particular race that's depicted in the photos, we can comment on it, but we can't really fully appreciate it, is what I'm saying. Does that make sense? I hope it does. I think you guys know where I'm coming from. You know, these were portraits. They weren't stereotypes and didn't portray the cultures in a negative light. She was trying to honor these cultures by imagining herself as part of those cultures. And to do that, she had to transform herself, of course, and that required changing her skin color. Now, in my mind, it's the visual equivalent of the words that U.S. President John F. Kennedy uttered on June 26, 1963, when he said, "Ich bin ein Berliner," a phrase which translates into, "I am a Berliner," a show of solidarity with the people of Berlin during the oppression of the Cold War. I believe that this woman's intent was genuinely good. She meant no harm, and if she knew that any of this would have happened, she probably wouldn't have done it, of course. But what I'd like to know is, were those people in Africa upset about this? I just don't know. You know, maybe it's just a Western world thing. We tend to get worked up about so much, right? On Petapixel.com, we took a poll asking readers what their opinion was of this Photoshop portrait project. Of the more than 2,700 respondents at the time of this recording, a full 82% thought that it was okay. So roughly about 1 in 5 people had a problem with it. And I don't know what their race is. Maybe that 82% are mostly white guys. I don't know. You know, hundreds of people, as you might imagine, commented on this story. Reader Cody Cobb had this to say, quote, "The people who are criticizing this stuff are the people who've received the brunt of racist discrimination and oppression over history. I don't think it's appropriate to call them racists for speaking out against a perpetuation of that tradition. Even if the project was done with good intentions, it was still done with a glaring lack of appreciation for the history of blackface." End quote. You know, this woman's in Hungary, so she doesn't maybe have a full appreciation for the history of blackface here in America. So I'm sure that might have played a part in it. She just wasn't educated about it. Now, user Adam Cross had another take on this issue, saying, quote, "So how dare she change these people's faces to look like her white features? She is erasing them. And this is what white people have done for generations." End quote. You know, I can see both sides of this argument, but what it comes down to is that she was trying to help the groups that she was portraying herself as. And she works as a human rights lawyer, so she understands these things, right? I don't think she meant to offend anybody. And yet, people were still offended. Noticeably absent at CES 2016 was anything having to do with Samsung's camera business. What camera business, you say? Exactly. The South Korean company has been showing off many of its latest and greatest products at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. But not one had to do with its camera business. Now, if you've been following along, you're aware that Samsung has been pulling its camera business out of countries left and right, sparking speculation that it was killing off its business altogether. There have even been rumors about Nikon buying the company's NX mirrorless technology, rumors that have been denied by the company and are generally thought to have been a hoax. So with a great opportunity like CES to showcase cameras, it sure looks like it's not interested in promoting its camera business at all. A business which may be coming to an end soon. Of this matter, Photo Rumors had this to say, quote, "I think Samsung is now done with their camera business. The CES show was pretty much their last chance to show a proof of life." End quote. DP Review is leaning that direction as well, saying this, quote, "Pour one out for Samsung cameras, because at this point, I would not be surprised if it's a thing of the past." End quote. Now, amateur photographer asked Samsung what's up with their camera business, and the company declined to comment. They also note that it's now been a full year since the last Samsung NX body was released, so it sure doesn't appear to be an important business to them, does it? In fact, the company refuses to confirm whether or not it's even manufacturing cameras anymore. So without being 100% certain, I think it's fair to say that it sure looks like Samsung's camera business is, for all intents and purposes, dead. But where does that leave their NX technology? Since everyone's saying that the rumors of Nikon buying their technology was a hoax and it's just not going to happen, who knows what's going to become of that technology now? But it doesn't make sense to hang on to it if you have no plans to use it and you can actually sell it off and get some cash for it. You know, Samsung is a huge company though. It's not going to be make or break for them. But why not sell it off? This is what companies do and shareholders like it when you help the bottom line. But who knows, maybe the rumor actually put an idea in their heads and Nikon will actually buy it after all. For a long time now, I've been saying Nikon, as well as Canon, needs to come out with a serious mirrorless system, and this would definitely help in that regard. But if it was a hoax and it's not true, what's in the works? Maybe nothing. I don't know. But for Samsung, their camera business seems done for, if it isn't already. If all you care about is taking pics and videos and would rather not have lenses to worry about, you may want to check out the Paper Like a Digital Camera retro-styled toy camera, which measures just 6 millimeters thick. Okay, you should probably also add to that list, doesn't care about quality, because this camera, between paper printed to look like a camera, is just awful. If you want to take a trip back to 1996 with this 1.3 megapixel camera and feel like $28 is best spent on this thing, rather than giving it to someone who's, I don't know, starving or something, hit the show notes for the link. Next. Are you tired of Naruto, the monkey that took the now famous selfie, then went back to flinging his poo or whatever else a monkey does, while PETA came up with this ridiculous notion that somehow the monkey has copyright claims to its photos? Yeah, me too. Well, on Wednesday, January 6, 2016, a federal judge in San Francisco stated that his plan is to dismiss the case, ruling that a monkey, which is an animal, of course, and not a human, cannot own the copyright to photos. According to CBS News in San Francisco, U.S. District Judge William Orrick sided with photographer David Slater, whose camera was used by the Indonesian monkey to take his photo. Judge Orrick said, quote, "I just don't see that it could go as broadly as beyond humans," end quote. Now, he argues that federal copyright law doesn't allow animals to hold copyrights, and well, anyone with any sense would agree with that, I would think. Animals don't even know what a camera is to start with. So this is ridiculous and makes a mockery of the American justice system. Back in 2015, PETA, which is the People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, apparently with photography skills, but they shortened it down to PETA because, you know, it was too long, amazingly filed a lawsuit against Slater, arguing that the monkey owns the copyright since he took the photos, and thus he should receive any money earned from those photos. The lawsuit stated that Naruto was responsible for, quote, "purposely pushing the shutter release multiple times and understanding the cause and effect relationship between pressing the shutter release, the noise of the shutter, and the change to his reflection in the camera lens," end quote. Okay, that's just stupid. I mean, come on. How is this even a thing? Seriously, this nonsense started back in 2014 after Wikipedia refused to take the photo down, siding with the monkey and categorizing it as public domain since it was stated that the monkey had pressed the button. Days later, the U.S. copyright weighed in stating that works cannot be registered by monkeys. And it should have ended there, right? But no. PETA had to clog the court system with what most people would agree is a completely stupid lawsuit based on an illogical premise. Now, if that wasn't weird enough, it got even more ridiculous when both sides fought over the identity and gender of the monkey in the now famous photos. So this must all be done, right? The judge has spoken. But no, it is not. Of course not, because that would be too easy. Now, Judge Orrick plans on dismissing the case, as I said, but he has given PETA permission to file an amended lawsuit. And that's exactly what the animal rights group says it plans on doing. You know, if you're a supporter of PETA and you're sending them money monthly or whatever to save animals, how could you possibly feel good about resources going to the group for fighting an Indonesian monkey's right to make money with its photography? I mean, come on. I don't know how much more plainly I can state that. It is ridiculous. Meanwhile, though, back in Indonesia, Naruto is blissfully unaware as he or she or whatever it is continues to fling its poo, search for food, and try not to get killed and do whatever else a monkey photographer does. You know, I envy that monkey. It has no idea how stupid all this is. Next. If you have Leica M lenses and you shoot Sony bodies, there is a cool adapter in development which marries the two and, get this, allows you to autofocus. That's right. I said autofocus. Now that's pretty awesome. Lens adapter company TechArt has announced that it's created the world's first ever Leica M to Sony E autofocus adapter. And while this is still in development, based on the video that they've released showing it in action, when it hits the market, there's a whole lot of people who are going to be interested in picking one of these up. Of this new adapter, the company says, quote, "Since we started developing FE mount autofocus adapters a few years ago, We always hope to develop something that allows autofocus for Leica M mount lenses. We weighed a few options and finally decided to use an autofocus system that is similar to Contax AX, meaning a change in flange focal distance, end quote. So basically what it does is it moves the lens forward or backward by up to 4.5 millimeters from the sensor plane, and that's how it achieves autofocus. So far, TechArt has tested it with the Sony A7 R2, saying that the focusing sound is soft and the focusing is fast and accurate. They say that they've tested 7 M-mount lenses thus far, and that all have worked well with the adapter and that camera body. When it's available, the adapter should be compatible with any M-mount lens, whether it's made by Leica, Voigtlander, or Zeiss. Now, the company is currently planning to send out adapters to photographers to test them out and to work out any kinks. And things are still in the early stages now, so there's no word about how much these lenses will cost or when they'll be available, but stay tuned, because this is kind of cool. I love old photos from back in the days when you stopped to think before pressing the button and making one. Less photos were created back then, and percentage-wise, I think they were more compelling. These days, people tend to blast through their photography, and they're not all gems. And hey, a lot of these weren't back then either. But you know what? These were the early days of photography. Well, if you enjoy looking at old photos like I do, you may be interested in perusing the 187,000 plus and growing collection of high-resolution images that the New York Public Library has put online. In addition to old photos, illustrations and documents can be viewed through a really cool, powerful visualization tool that puts the entire collection at your fingertips. You're able to narrow down the collection by category, and if you see a photo that you like, you click it, it opens up on its new page, and you can download the high-resolution file yourself. Now, since all the photos in the collection are in the public domain, there's no restrictions on what you can do with them. You can have them printed, you can even use them commercially if you wanted to. Now to check them out, hit the show notes for episode 37 at petapixel.com/podcast. Kodak once again thinks that film is where it's at, and it's bringing back the Super 8 as a film camera with digital features this time around. I know, right? With a design that one of our readers on Petapixel described as Art Lego, the once giant company known for its dominance in the film business, then known for its inability to transition to digital despite making sensors for early digital cameras of all things, has announced that this new product and the ecosystem in which it'll live is going to be available sometime in 2016. Kodak tells us at Petapixel, quote, Super 8 is 50 years old. Now it is making a comeback among filmmakers, amateurs, and professional alike. The trend is analogous to the resurgence in interest in vinyl records, an analog renaissance, end quote. This new product is a further effort by Kodak to spark interest in film and keep it alive. You know, the new Star Wars movie and others this past year were shot on film, and the Rochester, New York-based company thinks that 2016 could very well be the first year that their film business is profitable again. You know, I grew up on film, and while I don't plan on shooting it anytime soon, I give them credit for trying to make lightning strike twice. The new Kodak Super 8 camera is a hybrid between an old Super 8 camera and today's digital technology. I guess the two of them got in a room and this is the result. I don't know. The camera is reminiscent of the classic Super 8 camera from many decades ago, but features a swiveling digital viewfinder for framing your shots, but then those shots are captured on Kodak Super 8 film, with each cartridge holding 50 feet of said film. Now, as for glass, you can get either a fixed 6mm Ricoh lens or a 6-24mm zoom on it. It has a jog wheel interface, a built-in light meter, cartridge detection, exposure control, manual speed/iris setting, and the ability to charge the battery via USB wall adapter. Kodak realizes that to compete with digital, it has to make the process as easy as possible for users, so it's designed in an ecosystem to handle all that. Once you're done exposing the film, which you can shoot at either 9, 12, 18, 24, or 25 frames per second, you send it back to Kodak where the company will process it, scan it, and deliver it back to you as a digital copy in addition to an 8mm film that you can use in projectors. Pricing and availability haven't been finalized as of yet, but Kodak CEO Jeff Clark is saying that we could see it as early as the fall of 2016 with a price between $400 to $750, depending on which lens you get on it, of course. but processing and digitizing a film cartridge should cost about $50 to $75 or so. So yeah, if you're going to break out your new Kodak Super 8 film camera to shoot some movies, you're either going to be making sure that they're really important family moments or whatever, or you're going to be burning through a lot of cash. You know, it's going to be interesting to see if Super 8 takes off again. You hear that, hipsters? Now you've got a film movie camera. Today's listener question comes from photographer Mike Anderson in Concord, North Carolina, who sent in his question via our voicemail widget. Now, you heard Mike open today's show. Let's hear what kind of question he has for me.
Hey now, Sharky. It's Mike Anderson. Back in episode 30, I think it was, you were talking about two street photographers, and they were both approached by people that didn't appreciate them having their pictures taken, and how both of them reacted, one negative and one more of a positive manner. It got me to thinking, and I've got a question. Is it better to get the shot, then apologize, or ask permission, and then get the shot? That could be for events and concerts, whatever you're doing. A lot of times with the things I'm shooting, whether it's events or sports, concerts, a lot of times it's in the moment. You don't have time to ask. I've been, reprimanded for taking pictures sometimes, but it's better to me to get the shot, then apologize, then miss the shot and, ask for permission. So anyway, I want to get your thoughts and your listeners' thoughts on that. Have a great day. You got a killer podcast. Big fan.
Thank you so much for your question, Mike. I greatly appreciate it. You know, this is a really important question, and one that I think that many of us struggle with as photographers. I know I did when I was a newspaper photographer. Over time, it got easier, and especially because I had the newspaper behind me. I had a rock-solid, legitimate reason to be photographing whoever I wanted, and not only because I had my First Amendment freedoms as a citizen, but because I was a working member of the press. Now, I didn't want to upset anyone, of course, but I had a job to do, and people generally understood that. If you live in a free society, there are certain things you have to deal with, and one of them is a press photographer taking your photo. Now, when you think about it, it's really not that big of a deal, you know, unless you're in a witness protection program or something. And I heard that pretty much weekly from people. And the funny thing is just about everyone thought they were the first to tell me that. And they were not. But what if you're not with the press? Most people aren't. And here in America, of course, if you're in public, you have zero expectation of privacy and can be photographed. That's just how it is. Candid photography is important. You know, street photography would largely not exist without it. If you had to ask people's permission first, in a lot of cities, you probably would get a no. So Mike, your question asked if it was better to get the shot and then apologize afterward, or ask permission and then take the shot. And you know what? There's really no one-size-fits-all answer to this, unfortunately. But there are things that you can do to decrease your chances of being hassled by somebody. Now, for me, it starts with dressing professionally, commanding your space, and being a nice person. If you look nice, you act confident, and you're not a jerk, that goes a long way in getting the job done. As my self-imposed uniform as a photojournalist, I chose gear from 5-Eleven Tactical. Black hat, dark polo shirt, dressy tactical cargo pants, and boots. You know, this stuff is made for law enforcement, and since it has that cop look, people take you more seriously. You look more official to them. So at a distance, people form an impression about you and they comply. It's psychology at work. But I also had a press pass hanging from me. And now while I don't suggest that people go out and make themselves a pass that says press across it, there's nothing wrong with making yourself one that has your photo, your name, and the name of your business. So from a distance, it conveys the same message to people. I don't think you're being dishonest by making yourself identification. Just don't put press on it. You know, if you're going to take their photo anyhow, there's no need for a confrontation, right? So anything within reason that gets the job done and gets them to behave themselves is a good thing. But generally, I say go ahead and get the shot. Most people are not going to harass you. Most people are good, right? And for those that do, explain to them your First Amendment rights. Now, for those of you outside the United States, it's important to know your laws and act accordingly. That is so crucial. In some countries, you can be arrested for photographing somebody without asking their permission. And who knows what happens if you ask their permission and later on they say that you didn't. So maybe you want to videotape everything. I don't know. So Mike, I say, go ahead and take the shot. Look at them, you know, smile, nodding to say thanks, and then move along. That usually gets the job done wonderfully, I've found. But be prepared, of course, for those that are going to give you a hard time, because that will happen again. There's no doubt about it. I always recommend that people think about what they're going to say, not just when you're approached by someone you've taken a photograph of, but also the police, because a lot of people will harass you, and they'll also call the police and say that you're up to no good. So make sure you know what you're going to say. Now, you're a professional photographer, and you can direct them to your website, etc. Most people, though, maybe not in this business professionally. This is why it would be a good idea for people to have your portfolio online, send them to a website where you can show them your photos, especially law enforcement. You know, they can bring it up on their smartphone, and it wouldn't even hurt also to have business cards with all your information on it. I think that makes it look like you're more serious and you're not just some creepy person out there taking everyone's photos. So thank you so much for your question, Mike. I really appreciate it. I'm so happy you brought it up because it's something that a lot of people deal with. Hey now. I'd like to thank you all for listening to episode 37 of the Petapixel Photography Podcast. Don't forget to check us out at petapixel.com/podcast for the show notes and to see what else we have for you. If you head on over there, you can leave us a voicemail question that we can answer here on the show. Or if you don't feel comfortable leaving a voicemail, go ahead and email me at lensshark@gmail.com. And if you'd like to connect with me personally, hit me up on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, where I'm Lensshark. That's LENSSHARK. All right, with that, I'll see you all in episode 38. Well, it's F8 and 250th of a second outside. It's time to shoot.
Please subscribe to the Petapixel Photography Podcast. My daddy is the host.